I'm Michelle Martin. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, a controversial broadcaster may be returning to the airwaves, and one of his verbal targets fights back. We'll tell you more. But first, on many college campuses, the importance of diversity is unquestioned. For many campus officials, it's a social ideal. Many consider diversity a crucial part of the educational experience. And for some, it's the law as they address issues of past discrimination in their communities. So we decided to ask two university leaders how they view the issue of diversity and Dr. Putnam's findings. I'm joined by Dr. Melvin Johnson, president of Tennessee State University, and Dr. J. Bernard Matchin, president of the University of Florida. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michelle.
Dr. Matchin, can I start with you? Do you think diversity is important, and if so, why?
Yes, we have as one of our important principles, the achievement of diversity is essential for becoming a world-class university. If you come from a small town in rural Florida, say, most of the people around you are just like you. It's very important as you come to know the world to realize that most people are not like you and that they have different beliefs, different value systems, and their expectations about what happens are going to be different than yours. And if you're going to succeed, you've got to understand that. We're looking for tolerance at a minimum and acceptance, hopefully, of differences.
Dr. Johnson, I think many people think of an historically black college and university as being just that, just a predominantly black environment. But your institution, and I bet at others, the number of students of other backgrounds is increasing. In fact, more than a fifth of the students at Tennessee State are of Caucasian backgrounds. How does that affect campus life?
Well, actually, the number is closer to 22% white and about 3% others at our campus. And we view diversity similarly as my esteemed colleague has mentioned. It creates an avenue of cultural competency on our campus. So it's infused throughout our courses and our disciplines. We think that it provides for access to the university environment for underserved populations. And it allows us to create the global awareness and the global competencies to operate with a different cultural setting. So it has extremely beneficial educational
So how do you respond to Robert Putnam's findings that more diverse communities tend to find less civic engagement, that there's no active hostility, but neither is there kind of this we are all, you know, we are the world kind of interaction going, that there's just a lot of lack of interest and a lot of hunkering down? How do you respond to that, Dr. Johnson?
Well, I think you have to do it in a positive way. We do recognize that civic engagement is something that doesn't start once the student arrives on a college campus. It should be infused in their upbringing. It should be infused in their high school environment. But in some of the cases of first-generation college students that we have attending our campus, they may not have had that exposure. So what we've tried to do is to involve the entire campus into service learning projects.
Sounds to me, in a way, Dr. Johnson, like you're saying, I'm not surprised. We just have to, this is something we have to teach people to do. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. It doesn't come as a surprise to us at all, but it's something that is infused in the motto of our institution, think, work, and serve. And so we take that service component very seriously.
Dr. Matchin, how do you respond to Dr. Putnam's findings? Are you surprised?
Actually, no. I mean, I think in the 60s and 70s, many of us were naive enough to think that our society could evolve into a true melting pot where everyone was like everyone else, regardless of culture and background. It turns out that we're a very rich vegetable stew with distinct components that exist together and that we are challenged to learn how to work together without assimilating to the extent that we lose our cultural identity. So I think Dr. Putnam may have been looking for the wrong things and not acknowledging the differences and trying to figure out how to make the differences a strength instead of a weakness.
Well, I think that he would argue with you. I think that his argument is that he wasn't looking for anything particular. He just wanted to figure out how it really works. And I think that he is, not to put words in his mouth, disappointed to find that how it really works is that people tend to stick to their own corner. Obviously, the focus of his study was communities, not college campuses, where there are lots of opportunities, and indeed people are encouraged to kind of get together and do stuff. And frankly, people have more free time. You know what I'm saying? They generally aren't raising families. Their focus is campus life. But I'm wondering, and I guess that leads me to my next question, Dr. Matchin, which is that outside of a college campus, where people are not encouraged or pushed to do things together, how does diversity really work, or is there really anything people can do or should be doing to get people to work together more closely?
You know, my experience is that people learn the behaviors of a lifetime during their younger years. That's why I endorse what Dr. Johnson talks about, which is service learning, where people actually engage the world while they're in college. And our experience is that once you create an expectation of engagement, it goes with them when they leave college and goes into the communities. And these people become the lightning rods for bringing different groups together in the community setting. So I've always felt that colleges are the springboard to the good things that happen in our society. And I think this is a good example of that.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. J. Bernard Matchin, president of the University of Florida, and Dr. Melvin Johnson, president of Tennessee State University, about diversity in the university setting and in the community. Dr. Johnson, Dr. Matchin, let me stick with you for a second. You said that many people were sort of naive a generation ago, thinking that just proximity would lead to relationship. Are you surprised at all by Dr. Putnam's findings? Because I guess our way of thinking of diversity has been these sort of two polar opposites. It's either conflict, which is that groups, diversity makes people sort of retreat to their corner. You know, the Balkans being perhaps an example of that, where people somehow, for whatever reason, retreated to their ethnic identity, or this kind of kumbaya utopian sense that we would all be friends if we kind of hung out together and did sort of things together. I'm wondering if you, working with young people as you do, did you ever have a moment of disillusionment when you thought to yourself, gee, it's not as easy as I thought it was going to be?
Absolutely. And I was a student in the 60s, and I was one of the kumbaya devotees, and it was difficult at first to realize that that wasn't the real world. So then you look how to make differences work for you. And it has to do with the need for different groups to work together in order to be successful in our world, whether it's in the workplace or in the community itself. We find that more and more of our students are going to be working in other countries after they graduate. To go to other countries while they're a student opens their minds to the idea that difference is not bad. Difference can be very good.
Dr. Johnson, be honest with me. Do your African-American alumni who attended the institution at a time when it was perhaps more mono-ethnic or less diverse, do they like this new diversity at the campus?
Well, that's a great question, and I will be very candid. There are some alums that sort of resist that approach, but I think those alums who are forward-thinking and can understand the value that a more diverse environment creates educationally for students to prepare them for the exposure that they're going to seek a need in a global society. I can take my own personal experience. I graduated from an HBCU, but I ended up in the military and stationed overseas in Germany and also the Netherlands. And I found those societies to be very tolerant and very inclusive. And so this experiment can work. It's not a melting pot necessarily, but it's one of I like to think of it as a tossed salad, where each individual component has its own unique characteristics, but together they make a beautiful dish.
How do you, Dr. Johnson, I may be pushing you beyond where you want to go, but you and your colleague are both university presidents, and you have a lot to say about how kids spend their time. As we pointed out, you've got lots of activities for them to engage in. Professors can require kids to work together. But how do you extend something like that beyond the college campus? What about in your own sort of professional life? Do you find that you have to work to make diversity work in your life as an adult?
I do all the time, and that's through engaging myself in the community. If you can really lock in on something that you're passionate about, it's sort of like if you can do that and if you can work in that environment, and you'll always be happy with what you're doing and you'll put your all into it.
Dr. Matchin, my final question to you. If you could go back and talk to the you of 30 years ago about how to think about diversity, what do you think you might have told yourself, or what would you tell that earlier, that younger, more naive Dr. Matchin, or pre-Dr. Matchin?
Well, wouldn't it be nice to be able to do that? I think 30 years ago, I didn't pay close enough attention to the realities that were evident in our society. And I bought into the notion that some idealistic coming together could overturn centuries of separation. Moreover, I was naive to the notion that distinctive culture should persist. The value of having a culture that transcends new relationships is something that I think we're just beginning to fully understand. My own son is married to an Indian woman. They have learned to share different backgrounds to the extent now that they have her culture, his culture, and their culture. And the synthesis of that has proved to be greater than the individual cultures that they had before they met one another.
You mean Indian Native American, or you mean Indian from India?
From India.
But what do you say to those who one of the reasons they're concerned about all this emphasis on diversity in sort of the past generation is that they fear that it erodes the common American culture, the common American identity, shared values. What do you say to those who have that concern?
I think that if you really look at the American culture, it is, in fact, this wonderful amalgamation of many different cultures. And the future of our country depends upon maintaining that commitment to allow different cultures to exist and yet to come together. That will be our strength in the new century, as it has been for the last two centuries.
And final thought from you, Dr. Johns?
Yes, and I think we're finding that out as we operate throughout the world, that a vast cultural understanding of how the world operates and how we exist within the world improves our ability to become the global leader that we should be.
Dr. Melvin Johnson is president of Tennessee State University. He joined us from Spotland Productions in Nashville. And Dr. J. Bernard Matchin is president of the University of Florida. He joined us from his office by phone. Gentlemen, thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you,
Absolutely.
Michelle.
Thank you very much.